Hello.
Bonjour.
Hi.
And welcome to Meet at the Hotel Bar. We are Freddie,
JC,
and Puss
from the band Floors, a three-piece indie pop band from London via Huddersfield.
So since we started touring with Floors, travelling the world, and during our previous lives as session musicians, we realised there are so many funny things that happen on and off stage, and so many stories that never get shared with the rest of the world. They just stay in the dressing rooms and the tour buses of the bands and artists you love.
Until now. In this podcast, we are lifting the lid on life on the road. And where better to meet up and tell those touring tales than a place every touring musician knows well, the trusty hotel bar.
So why the hotel bar?
Well, I feel like the hotel bar is like the place, it's the beginning of every story. It's the beginning of every night out. If you're on tour and you stay in the hotel, you know, you get there and you're like, oh, I'm just going to quickly freshen up. I'll meet you in the hotel bar in 15. It's that kind of thing, meet at the hotel bar.
In today's episode, we met up with the talented and hilarious man that is Dan from The Wombats in a hotel bar in Clapham. The Wombats have released 5 studio albums, their latest, Fix Yourself, Not the World, hitting the number one spot. They've toured the world, winning over fans with their infectious hooks and tongue-in-cheek sense of humour, and even recently headlined the mighty O2 Arena.
This is one of my favourite episodes we've done. Dan was the most talkative guest yet. We spoke for hours and actually had to cut down so much of our conversation to fit it into a presentable single episode. Maybe one day we'll release an uncut version, who knows. It was also actually the first episode where a passerby, a fellow hotel bar drinker, actually pulled up a chair to listen to our fascinating conversation too. Our very own studio audience.
Stay tuned to hear stories of how to survive terrible reviews whilst touring the east coast of Norway. Tour managers appearing from nowhere and falling from stage, the adventures of their trusty travel companion, Steve the Squirrel, and what happens when you bring magical gummy bears on tour.
This is Dan from The Wombats, coming up on Meet at the Hotel Bar.
Anyway.
Right,
let's start.
I'll start.
So welcome.
Welcome to Meet at the Hotel Bar. The first question is always, what would you like to drink?
Well, I've just had breakfast, so I would like a black coffee, please.
Black coffee, okay.
That's fantastic. Well, we'll get the same.
Yeah. Can we get four black coffees, please?
Coming right up, love.
Oh, cheers, everybody.
Cheers. Yeah.
Cheers to the.
Okay. Do you know what? On the topic of coffee, I just bought one of those stovetop mocha express things.
Oh, nice.
You know, the Bialetti ones, I feel like you used to have.
Oh,
one.
I've got one. Yeah. The little metal things.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's a game changer. Yeah. So it's like proper.
And it like whistles at you.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. You need really finely ground coffee,
you
don't
do.
You?
Yeah. I've got it.
Oh, yeah. The Italian, like the
yeah, exactly.
The silver.
The stovetop
yes.
thing. Yeah.
Yeah. They are
what made
great.
You want to get one of those?
So we bulk bought coffee on Amazon, and I didn't realize that it was an espresso grind, like you said, it was too fine for the cafetiere. Mm-hmm. So we had 6 bags of the stuff, and it's just not suitable for the cafetiere. So every morning we're drinking ludicrous amounts of caffeine and basically eating the grinds.
Oh yeah, it's quite a muddy.
So yeah, exactly.
Can we just rewind to bulk buying coffee from Amazon?
What is that, good or bad?
Bad.
You don't like Amazon?
No, support your local man.
Who's that?
Well, whoever your local coffee brewer is.
Doesn't exist.
So this year, The Wombats' new album, Fix Yourself, Not the World, went to number one in the UK, followed by a world tour, including London's O2 Arena. It seems like 2022 is treating you very well.
Yeah, a lot better than 2020 and 2021, for sure. I don't know whether it was all more, whether it felt more special because of the pandemic, or whether it just was, you know, it would have been anyway. We've had such an amazing time getting back out there, like, playing in front of people again, you know, for 2 years we hadn't, obviously, same as you guys. It was just, you realise how lucky you are to get to do what you love.
Yeah, absolutely.
And to see, like, it's such a positive thing in life, isn't it? Music and performing and, like, seeing people just smiling, having a great time. All sorts of crap goes on in people's lives, and then they just get to that room and sing along to their favourite songs, or their mates drag them. They've never even heard any of your music, but you can't help but get like carried along in the sort of wave of enthusiasm that all live shows tend to have.
Yeah.
We've had an amazing year so far.
Sick.
And obviously the album being number one was like, it's kind of an arbitrary number that is just, you know, that same amount of sales the week after with right. a different artist wouldn't have been, you know.
It's so weird, isn't it?
It's kind of random. But at the same time, even though we're all quite like cynical people who are just like, yeah, whatever. But at the same time, we were a bit like, all our family are texting, all our friends are like, no way. So it does have that sort of, it's just like a little career milestone thing that people will remember. And I've obviously got a little number one
there we go.
Trophy on That's the wall. Cool. And, yeah. you know, no, it was really nice for us, you know, a little band from Liverpool kind of being at the top spot in the whole of the UK. It was a special moment. We were in Washington really jet lagged when we found out, so it was even more surreal.
Okay. And when did you get the actual trophy thing?
Well, the charts company.
Just sorry to interrupt. There's a bear that's just walked.
Oh goodness me.
Look at him. I've seen him in here before.
Oh really?
Yeah, yeah. So there's like, you know, the film Beethoven.
Yeah.
There's basically one of them, but like St. Bernard, is it? No,
yeah,
is
that actually St. Bernard? I think so. It's St. Bernard.
I mean, he is a big
guy. I think
guy.
It's a grizzly bear, actually.
Yeah, it's closer to a grizzly, to be fair.
The dog could be, it's as big as the sofa.
He's taller than us.
Absolutely. Sorry to interrupt.
Or like one of the wolves from Game of Thrones. Kind of really want to go over and lie next to him.
Just give him a big cuddle.
Should we just pause the podcast and I'll go for a cuddle with the dog? All right, we'll be right back, people.
Yeah, we'll be back with full of oxytocin. And we're back.
Oh, that was great. That's good.
JC's good at head scratching.
I've got hair everywhere. I swear, man.
But yeah, so the charts company, they like send you, which I don't know how that works. Honestly, they must send out to any of the in the midweeks. They must send the number one thing, the little gold, you know, statuette or whatever, to a bunch of different artists who are all potentially going to get it. Because in our hotel, the number one thing was there for us
in Washington.
Yeah, yeah,
that's class.
DC. Yeah, yeah, for us to take a photo with it. It was like in the lobby, and we walked down. We were like, "What? How did they know this?" And we haven't spoken to anyone from the company, but they must hedge their bets and just send them to the top four or five that week.
Yeah.
And then you have to pay for your actual one,
like Sports Personality of the Year.
But imagine if that's true, and you are the person that comes at number two or number three. Imagine receiving the trophy.
Please return to.
Yeah. So yeah, that was our experience of that.
Sick. And how's festival season? We're literally in the middle of festival season right now. How's it going?
Yeah, it's been awesome so far. We had a pretty mad week last week. We did tram lines up in Sheffield, and then we went over to Chicago to do Lollapalooza, and then came back, drove overnight on the tour bus from Heathrow up to Kendal and did Kendal Calling.
Yeah.
Kendal Calling was actually one of the best festivals.
Yeah.
I've never been there before.
It goes up, doesn't it? It was like it literally
natural
goes up. It looks brilliant.
Have you played there before?
It was great.
Stunning. Like, so nice. And then I actually had to drive back down to Liverpool and get a 7 a.m. flight the next day to my best friend's wedding in France. And I had 45 minutes sleep.
Wow.
Oh,
so that was a.
Did you last the full day?
I did. I was one of the last to bed. Yeah.
Good on you.
Yeah.
Nice.
Solid effort.
Yeah. I feel like when you've been on tour for years, you know, I don't know about you guys, but the amount of times you've like got off a plane or got off a tour bus, having had an awful night's sleep, and then someone's like, you have to go and get on stage like in an hour, and you're like, oh my god, how am I gonna do this? And the adrenaline of the moment just like carries you through. It was the same at the wedding, really. Like,
I guess that's gonna put you in good stead for life as a dad.
It is, yeah. 4 weeks to go. I think so. But the other two guys in the band, they've had kids, and they were like, they now say when they come on tour, they're like, that's like a holiday for them.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. You know, they're crazy. Like, because it's so intense, and like, you know, you don't get that much sleep and stuff, I think, especially in the first 6 months, do you? But no, I'm looking forward to it.
Awesome. Well, we also saw that you guys have just been over in Australia touring out there. And it's definitely a place that we'd love to play one day. It's on the bucket list. So we just wondered how that was and if any highlights or whatever.
Yeah. So we've been lucky enough to, probably because of the name, we go back there like since our first album, really. And every album we've been probably like at least two times.
Sweet.
And I feel like of all the weirdest thing I felt at first, which I'm sure you will as well, is that it's the furthest place you can possibly travel, but the people there are the most similar of in anywhere in the world to the UK. There really is like a sense of humor that's like so similar, a similar outlook on life, you know, laughing at the darkness and how ridiculous things are. And I feel like we just bonded like with Australia in general when we were over there. Yeah, this time round, again, we hadn't actually been there for 4 years because of the pandemic and the way it all worked out. And it was one of the best tours we've ever done. Again, it's such a big country that it's like early morning lobbies with a flight to the next city. One time we did a gig in Perth, and then we flew to Splendor in the Grass Festival, which is on the Gold Coast, and we had to do a red-eye flight. So straight off stage into a plane, a 5 or 6 hour flight across the whole country, get up, little flight up the coast, and then straight to the festival. You know, it's a mad place to tour, and you're jet lagged as well.
Have they got different time zones there? Or is
Yeah. So between Melbourne and Adelaide, there's a half an hour difference time. Really? And you're like, really? What's the point?
Yeah.
And never forget, honestly, like, thankfully phones nowadays, like, do the change for you, don't they? Yeah. If you set it to automatic anyway.
I've never heard that before. Yeah. That's crazy.
Apologies to anyone in Adelaide if we've ever been half an hour late on stage.
And when you're in Australia, did you have any time to explore at all?
So the first like week was pretty intense, so not really. But then we had a day off in Sydney. Well, a morning off. So the night before we went out, and there's like these, they project lights onto like loads of different buildings and onto the Sydney Opera House. And mm-hmm. there's a really amazing, like slightly carnival-y atmosphere down there. So just went there and sat in an old man boozer with, I've got a cousin from Ireland who lives over there. So whenever I go over, it's like, we just go and sit in a pub and drink Guinness.
Perfect. Yeah. That's all the exploring you need to do, I think.
Do you have like, so in terms of like all like touring stuff, have you got a favorite city that you always love to return to?
Around the world.
Yeah, anywhere.
Yeah. It's
the hometown thing, surely.
I mean, obviously playing Liverpool is always amazing. But it also, it's a totally different feeling than like playing New York or Sydney or San Francisco or Tokyo. You know, like playing at home is obviously like, it's great because you see all like friends and family, but then there's that not added pressure, but there's like, it feels like you're organizing a party as well as having to do a gig.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's texts all day like, are we meeting beforehand or what's going on? Can we come down and meet, you know? And you're like, oh, just, but anyway, yeah, no, Liverpool, obviously, let's put that at the top. But for me, like just, whenever anyone asks that question, it's like there's so many places that I have so many fond memories of. I think you have to have that love of traveling and that love of adventure and exploration and all the rest of it that can come with touring. Because if not, you know, what are you doing being on the road all the time?
Yeah.
So like whether it's Paris, Oslo, Rome, you know, there's just like Europe is just everywhere you go, Amsterdam, you know, every city. I know this is a really boring answer, but I don't know if I could actually pick
one.
Yeah, it's too hard because everywhere's got so much going for it. Also, I think after like years of touring, you get to the point where you've been to each of those, you know, you tend to play the same big cities, don't you, essentially, yeah. like on each album. And it's really nice going back to some of the same cafes or restaurants or parks or, oh, do you remember when we, you know, there is that, you find little senses of home, even though you're miles away from actual home.
Absolutely. Some of our favourite tour stories and memories have been on our days off. Travel days stuck in the middle of nowhere. We're starting to compile a list from all our guests of any particular days off that come to mind as the greatest travel day ever that you've experienced. We've had some hilarious answers already. A banana museum.
Laser quest. Random places.
Oh, nice.
Is there any sort of like things that you like to do? Do you have any like habits of like, oh, when we're in so-and-so, we always have to go to?
Well, last week in Chicago, ended up going to this restaurant from, you know, Chef's Table on Netflix.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a series. Alinea. It's like one of the world's best restaurants or whatever, and it was Todd's birthday, so we went there. So often on days off, like, we try and go on, you know, find a nice restaurant. Yeah. Doesn't have to be that nice. Obviously, that was a special occasion because he was 40. But, you know, we'll usually try and make the most of the day and go and do something nice. I would say, I'm just going to have to say, so this is coming into my head because it's actually definitely not the best day, but we had a really long drive in America. But you know what the journeys between cities can be like? Essentially, you're driving for like 20 hours to your next gig.
Yeah.
And we had some gummy bears that were you know, magical gummy bears.
Okay.
Because it's legal over there. So, and that was our day off. And it was
those,
very
did those
surreal.
Did 20 hours go quicker or slower?
Yeah, very surreal. Our monitor engineer had a bit too much. And I was just like putting my hands together doing this like, oh God, it all makes sense. Like, you know, you just... No, I'm trying to... actual days off. Like we've got friends who live in Marin County. And on this last tour, ended up going to stay with them for this day off. We had, it's just outside San Francisco. Oh, nice. And there's like Redwoods.
In Muir Woods. Yeah,
Muir Woods. Have you been there?
Yeah, I did it. Yeah. We had a day off in San Francisco once. And
It's just beautiful, isn't it? Yeah. And like, I think the reason those kind of days genuinely do come to mind is because you spend so much time like cooped up on a tour bus or in hotels or whatever. It's very like city. Right. And after many weeks of that, just to be surrounded by like insane trees, unbelievable greenery, you know, fresh air.
Yeah. Did you cycle?
No, we didn't. We just did like the hike.
Okay.
And it's probably like, I don't know, 3 or 4 hours or something. Had a lovely home cooked meal at our friend's house. And yeah, that was probably the best day off in recent memory.
Yeah. I actually always said that. So when I was playing for Ella, we had a day off, travel day in San Francisco. And I remember we cycled from like San Fran, like across like Golden Gate Bridge to like Sausalito. And then like carried on going.
And did you go around and then get the boat back across?
We cycled all the way back.
Oh,
and
did
like,
you? Oh.
It was it was the longest, like, yeah, we definitely bit off more than we could chew.
Did you get the slightly like electric bikes that you
no,
do pedal?
But not they, even.
Really? Because I did that on a day off one time with my now wife. And like, but we got, they said, the hills are really steep here. So unless you've got mega thighs, you know, to get up to the Golden Gate Bridge from the city, that like, you know, you go through the park along the water and then up that bit, people were just pushing their bikes up that. And we were like, doo-doo-doo. Got so sunburned that day.
Okay, so... take us back. So obviously this podcast is all about life on the road. Take us back to your first ever tour. What are your memories from your very first tour?
By first tour, do you mean like...
not like gig, like first time you were like away, and you know, when you went from a city to then the next city and it was like, you know, all the lads, like that kind of like feeling. Talk us through.
I think the first time I had that sense was when we toured from Norway. So before we were signed, and you know, we'd been going for like maybe 2 or 3 years, and we went over to Norway and we did Oslo. We went to Stord. We were going to do a tour of the west coast of Norway, as you do,
which every band would go through.
Yeah,
the bucket list.
Yeah, tour. And but because obviously, like A, no one knew who we were, and B, it was us organizing it. We did 2 gigs on this one island, and that's all we did. But I remember that sense of like, you know, you're going over there, and like it's unknown. You know, yeah. I think that's the thing that I always remember most. Like, so we played in this place called Fitjar, which is like this tiny little village at the top of this tiny little island. And we played in this hotel basement that had like country music on sometimes and stuff. And the Wombats played there. And so we went in, did the gig, so excited. Some of our family had come over and like, you know, we had an amazing time. But at one point, we couldn't understand what they were saying at the time, but this old lady had just come down to like see who was playing, probably thinking it was going to be some nice country music. And she stood there, she looked really confused, and she was kind of holding onto the stair rail just at the bottom of the stairs. And then after like 2 songs or something, she walked up and said something in Norwegian. And then we asked one of our friends afterwards, what did that old lady like shout at the back? And he said, oh, this is the worst music I've ever heard.
What a quote.
Yeah. And we were like, oh yes, we'll write that on our next EP.
That's so good.
That was a great experience. And then all in the early days, to be honest, like we just kind of, even though we weren't, you know, we weren't getting signed, and we were just like, oh well, we'll just take any gig we can do. And we ended up playing North by Northeast in Toronto, and a load of our family like came over and made a bit of a trip of it. We stayed in like a little hostel, and you know, it was freezing cold in Toronto, but first time over to North America like as a band, and just had the best time. You know, we were just constantly going out partying and barely sleeping and doing like loads of gigs all week. And and it was just those early moments of like, it's that little carrot in front of you, you know, where you're like, oh, yeah, maybe this is what it's going to be like. And we were like 21, 22 yeah. at the time. And, you know, there's that hunger that, to be honest, we've still kind of got that feeling yeah. of like, as soon as you go on tour, it's the same thing of just like, come on, you know, almost go into battle, kind of like, let's do this.
I want to go on tour now.
Yeah, I know. Well, I mean, I want to go on tour every single day of the week. We were looking back at some old video footage together the other day, and like just looking back at tour diary stuff, and it just makes you miss it so much. It's such a special, concentrated, like intense time.
Yeah, yeah.
That when you're in it, it is hard to sort of really look at what you're doing or like. That what you're doing right then is you're going to remember forever.
Yeah.
Or like they're going to come up in conversations and stories for years to come.
Yeah. Well, with our, because especially in the early days, like my dad, Murph's dad, and various friends of theirs would like, you know, just be like, what, the lads are playing in Toronto? Or we did Beijing and Shanghai, like through our music
over.
School. Yeah, yeah. And they were like, this might never happen again, which, of course, that's how we viewed every gig and every tour back then. It's like, well, we may never get a chance to come back again. So it was just like almost dads and lads, like just piss up the whole time with a few gigs thrown in. And so now it's, you know, the amount of stories from those early like trips. Do you remember when we did this and we slept on this promoter's floor and we did, you know, like all those things. It's kind of, obviously now it's got a bit more organized, a bit more like,
I was gonna say the next thing is what's changed now, like have those, you know, like what's changed in the touring
world for us. I think like
does your dad still come out? Does
yeah, so they're so supportive. Like you mentioned the O2 before, like the whole family came down from Liverpool. Tords came over from Oslo, well, from Elverum, and Murph's in-laws came over from America. And yeah, everyone's always been like so supportive. And obviously since the early days when they were coming out to like whatever gig we had, there's a real sense of like shared journey with them that they all helped us so much in the early days, like invested either financially in helping us buy amps and, you know, drum kits and petrol money down to places or just emotionally by like actually being the only five people at a gig, you know, those moments and they're there like watching you again, you know, but they'll come down, and we'll be there, and they're like cheering and singing along, and like they're your biggest fans, aren't they? Like, so they give you that, I suppose, that little extra bit of belief that what you're doing might actually be decent and other people might like it. They were all so supportive, so at the O2 and wherever else they come out and see us. And we've got this thing now where in Let's Dance to Joy Division, like one of the last songs we play, we get a bunch of people out in like giant wombat costumes that we take around with us. So it's kind of become a thing that, you know, like...
So they dress up?
Often it's like friends and family. It's like, you've never been the wombat before? And they're like, oh no, I can't do that. There's all those people, my mum did it at Glastonbury 3 years ago, whatever. And after that weekend, and I quote, it was the first time she'd been there, she went, oh, I think I might become a hippie after this. She just loved it so much. Like, it, but yeah, so how have things changed? I guess the main thing is just the organisation. You know, we've got more of a team around us. Like, it's more consistent for us on stage every night. We've got, like, great, like, techs and monitor engineer and all, you know, tour manager, front of house. Like, I feel like our show or whatever is, like, much more consistent.
Yeah.
I suppose, like, hotels have got slightly better. We don't tend to stay in travel lodges anymore. But we still have had a few shockers that we've stayed at that are talking about, like, especially in America where, like, budgets are lower and stuff. And it's like, whew, I remember these days, right? Come on, knuckle down, check the bed sheets for, like, bugs and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You know, all that stuff. trying to think what else has changed, really. I guess as you get older, you a bit, like, calmer. I mean, we still go out and have a good time and stuff, but whereas in the past you might be staying out to like 4 or 5 in the morning just getting blasted and having a wild time, now it's more like 1 or 2 o'clock, and you know, you remember going to bed more. So I'd say it's a bit calmer, and because the pressure of the shows maybe is a bit higher as you play bigger rooms, and you've been through enough hungover gigs where you're like, oh, we can't keep doing that. So a bit more sensible, but only a bit.
Yeah. Do you get emotional? You know, when you're playing those shows like the O2, do you get emotional? Are you like,
and
if you see like your friends or your family or whatever, like, can do they get emotional? Like,
Oh, massively. We did The O2, actually, I remember seeing...
I think I'd be an absolute mess.
Yeah, well, I nearly couldn't sing. You know, when you get like a lump in your throat kind of thing, just that sense of, every when, you know, that sort of like all these feelings and thoughts and struggles you've been through and other people have been through, and all those moments seem to like suddenly come together in one millisecond of just emotion and like, but whilst you're playing music and concentrating like hell, and then it hits you and you're just like, what's happening right now? I remember that at Glastonbury as well. I looked out and saw my sister on my brother's shoulders in this sea of like, you know, whatever, thousands of people. And like all these flags flying and looking around, just taking it all in. And then I saw my sister and it was like, oh, I'm going. Oh no, I've got to sing. Trying to do some falsetto whilst crying is not easy.
It is that thing though, like if you acknowledge what you're doing at that exact moment, or when you see someone and it takes you instantly into, oh shit, how long has it taken us to get here and we're actually here? I had that feeling when we played Manchester Academy 1.
Oh yeah,
it was the venue that I saw my first ever gig in.
Yeah, amazing venue.
And yeah, wicked venue. And we played it with AJR and I had the same thing. I looked out and I saw my parents and my sister and family friends and my wife's parents, and like it hits you hard.
Oh God, yeah.
And it's funny how you can pick out a face in that sea of people.
It's mad.
I remember that show. Yeah. So like obviously like all my like schoolmates and stuff were all there. I remember there's like a part in the set where we get everyone to like get down low. And literally like my best mate, Teddy, was literally like, so everyone, like the whole crowd, obviously like all got down apart from like my mate, literally right at the front. It was like, he's like, I've been doing this since we were 13. I'm not doing this. And I was like, you a dick, get down.
Did you sing
yeah,
it about?
Yeah. What are you doing, man? You're ruining the whole thing.
Brilliant.
So after all these years of touring, do you have any top tips or touring hacks? I guess mainly for musicians that are setting out to do the same thing.
I'd just say like enjoy it as much as you can, and all those best moments and stuff are when you're not thinking about anything else. You know, you're not thinking like, where's this tour gonna get us, or where's this gig gonna, you know, any of those things about like trying to make it, or you know, especially if you're not signed and stuff. I think that's one thing I'm really glad that we, of course, we had moments where we're like, oh, I wish we got signed and we could do that. You know, the best thing about being in a band is hanging out with your mates, going to random cities. Like, I think that's the most important thing, really, just to have a great time and realize that playing music in front of however many people, wherever you can in the world, is like an absolute gift.
Yeah.
I mean, practical tips wise, I'd say if you can afford it, get a good tour manager. Because I mean, it means that there's less to think about. But then at the same time, in the early days, it's kind of funny the scrapes you get into when one of you gets designated as like tour manager. And we started doing that before you had like smartphones as well, which, thinking back, like I don't know how we actually managed to even pull off any of those gigs, to be honest, because we were so useless. But yeah, anyway, just enjoy it.
Okay.
So what is the most diva-ish item on the Wombat's rider? Currently or in the past?
I think our rider, well, we've got natural wine on the rider now.
That's natural nice. Wine. Organic?
No, natural.
What's the difference?
What's the difference?
Ooh. Ooh, so...
Less hangover.
Yeah.
Much less hangover.
Basically, I had a friend who was a sommelier in Paris. I kind of lived there for about 5 years, and he was like, he came from generations of winemakers, and he was really into this natural wine. I was like, you know, is that organic wine? He was like, well, it is, but it's also lots of other things. So basically, there's a whole movement about natural wine. It's kind of like the indie punk, you know, genre in the winemaking world. Okay. So it's mainly like younger winemakers who they don't want to use any pesticides, anything else, like, so similar to organic but even more strict than that. They call it like low intervention wines. So
does it taste good?
It's amazing. Oh, really? Honestly, like, well, my dad calls it gnat's piss, like, you know. So he likes his kind of like a more traditional kind of wine. That they're all very unusual, like funky tastes. Like, it's just, honestly, you could drink it for breakfast, which is a little bit dangerous.
That sounds dangerous.
Yeah, but they're so nice, and because of the, like, there's no real sulfites added, no chemicals, nothing. It's just grape juice. So that's mainly naturals. Then you've got like biodynamic as well, which some of those, they like, they go even a bit more kind of into the astrology, and like, you know, it's like, oh, what is it they do? They bury like ram skulls in the ground. You know, there's a few things like that where it starts getting like
spiritual,
very almost. Spiritual yeah. almost. But natural wines in general are just make, you know, try and let nature do its thing, and you yeah, just yeah. encourage it. And so that's probably the most diva-ish thing I would say.
The poor runner at the venue is like
yeah.
searching for ram skulls in a vineyard. Yeah.
prepare your own homemade.
Yeah. So we've actually now, like, we got to the point where Tordy's the most obsessed with it. So he'll research, especially if we've got a day off the next day and we want some decent natural plonk, he'll look, you know, we're in whatever city, he'll find a place that sells natural wine, yeah. and then our tour manager will send that to the runner and be like, go here, order this and this, thank you. And like
fair
then
play.
Yeah, so but that's probably the most diva-ish. Yeah,
no, that's good.
What about you guys?
What is it? I mean,
JC likes, you like your whiskies.
Whiskey, yeah. I'm quite particular about what the whiskey is. We have to be, yeah, specific. Cause
Oh, so just Jameson.
Like, we go, here you go, here's a bottle of Bell's, and we're like...
Mm-hmm. Ooh, not a blend.
Yeah.
Can't be doing that. No. None of that.
I don't know. We love hummus. So
yeah, we have massive hummus. Just
the hummus and pitta, bananas.
Yeah. Maybe we should up the standard of hummus that we get.
Yeah.
Organic hummus. Good.
Like,
organic
I actually hummus. Just bought... found this new one in Tesco called Ramona's hummus, and it's bang.
I think I had that the other day. Was it on offer?
Has it got a green lid?
No, it's like a big no, it's like a big
yellow yeah, beige be, colour. Yeah,
I think hummus is beige.
No,
what colour hummus you've been eating?
Next podcast you do, you'll be like, oh, I just ordered 1,000 pots of that hummus from Amazon.
Bulk buy, baby.
Yeah.
I think the whiskey's probably the most diva-ish thing.
Yeah, I'd say.
We just like, we said like local lagers.
We do that.
We're quite tame though. We're like non-alcoholic beers as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we get quite a few non-alcoholic.
Nice. A local newspaper, that was it. Yeah. Local, just like to have a little local newspaper.
That's a nice one.
Yeah. JC can read any language in the world as well, so it's really useful.
Wow.
Keeps him quiet.
I don't know what the original idea was. That was, I wanted to get like a newspaper for every city that we went to and just keep the front covers and then like plaster it on a studio wall one day of like all the gigs you've played in different. So I started doing it. So I've got a big like shoebox full of like front covers.
Oh, nice.
But then I forget and then.
Yeah.
I got you to get one on my wedding day as well, didn't I?
I did.
I was like, oh, yeah, shit.
Still owe me £3.20 for that.
I know they're expensive on a Saturday.
So expensive.
So our tour manager, like when he was writing out the rider, you know, we go through everything, and for the last however many years, we've been trying, we have on there, like, if the water in the venue is drinkable, please don't give us, like, plastic bottles. You know, we've got our own refillable bottles. You know, be kind to the environment kind of thing. If not, our tour squirrel, Steve, will get very angry. And then he had a picture of a squirrel with a knife. And I think he'd mentioned Steve earlier in it and, like, basically made out that we had a squirrel that we toured with us. And no word of a lie, in America, on at least two occasions, we had, because he'd put on there a bag of nuts for Steve the squirrel, thinking that pretty much everyone's going to realize that this is just a joke. So we get to this place in America, I can't remember where it was, and there's a bag of like actual food for a squirrel from a pet store. And then this lovely lady came in and she was like, oh, just wondering, where's Steve the squirrel? Can I see him? And we were like, sorry, it's just a joke. And she was like, oh, I was wondering if it was, but I just wanted to make, you know, just in case it wasn't. And it was so sweet. And so anyway, she then went away, I think, and like bought us an actual little stuffed squirrel and brought it in as like, obviously having a joke. And she went, here you go. I feel like you guys need Steve on tour. And then Steve lived on my drum kit for like the next few years after that.
Oh, that's amazing.
But yeah, that was fun.
Shout out Steve the squirrel.
Yeah, Steve.
Shout out to Steve.
Murph actually threw him into the crowd back in January. And Steve the squirrel now has his own Instagram account.
Oh, okay.
So these like two fans who've got Steve are like, actually, we know he's gone to a good home.
Okay, that's good. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can breathe out. So the beauty of gigs is that not everything always goes according to plan. What is the worst thing? I know you mentioned about like tour manager stuff, but what's the worst thing that's happened on tour? Like on stage, off stage, hit us with your very worst. Everyone's got a horror story.
I can't tell that story. we've had obviously several moments where a computer is like overheated at a festival, or fallen off because of vibrations, and all of a sudden the backing track goes off and the click, and depending on the song, obviously we can normally just like keep playing and don't think people will notice that much, because obviously we are actually, you know, it's all coming from stage really, but there's a few little bits. And but there's the, because for us our keyboards are actually like linked to the computer as well, so we have everything like sampled on the computer, so we're playing it but it's coming from there. So if it breaks and you're playing like, if we're playing like Tokyo or a song that has loads of keyboards, we kind of can't keep playing. So there, I think they're the worst moments, to be honest. And that's happened on several occasions. One time my dad ended up coming up on stage and then fell backwards through my drum kit.
What?
That was a pretty great moment in Sheffield.
Was he all right? Was he?
Yeah, he was shit faced. So
I was going to say, was he drunk?
Yeah. He was off his head. And I can't remember what he was even doing up on stage, to be honest. I think he was just jumping up and down. Like, can't remember.
Was he in a wombat costume?
No, see, this was before the wombat costumes. But Murph once was, you know, he'd had a few drinks and on stage and he fell backwards into my drums as well in the middle of a song. And we kept playing and he was just laughing, lying on his back.
I feel like the wombat thing, like the, you know, the dressing up as a wombat, surely that's dangerous, like, you know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I've got a couple of stories about that, yeah. So in this giant wombat costume, you can't actually really see anything through the eyes. So you're really hot, you can't see much, and you're jumping around. Anyway, it's a sensory overload. So we've had two people fall off the stage. Fortunately, they've been absolutely fine. But again, I mean, we keep playing, but you are like, oh my God, are they okay? Because you're not sure how big the drop is.
Is it a cushioned wombat suit?
Yeah, it's the head's quite cushioned. So the funniest one is our tour manager, like in Greek Tragedy, he used to like, he'd run on stage with a guitar and like pretend to air guitar, like the last solo of in that song. And he'd run on and it got more and more elaborate as time went on. And he was like running on doing like, you know, knee slides and like all sorts of different things. So one time we were playing in Melbourne at the Palais Theatre, and he'd figured out in the day that he could like run from in the crowd all the way down and jump up on stage in the costume. So, and he didn't tell us that he was going to do this. So like we were, you know, as this bit was coming on, normally we see him, you know, off in the stage, in the wings of the stage or whatever it's called. He wasn't there. We're like, fuck's Gromo. And then all of a sudden, like, we see this wombat sprinting down the aisle with a guitar held high. And we were like, oh my God, what is he doing? And like, he runs up, he puts one foot on the step that he knew was there. He didn't realize the orchestra pit was next to it, like with a 2 meter drop.
Oh no.
And he literally like, and we've got it on video. It's the funniest thing. This is like our pick me up whenever we're feeling hurt down. He goes, he's about to step up and he just hits the deck. And on this video that someone sent us from the crowd, you could hear this guy going, I hope that bear is okay. Or I hope that bear's okay, mate. It was genius. Like, so we've had
to find that.
Yeah, honestly. I'm pretty sure we posted it on the Wombats at some point back then. But anyway, he's an absolute like character, our tour manager, and he's taken to like trying to almost like prank us whilst we're on stage when he's dressed as the wombat. And it's rank stories, but he tries to put us off in lots of awful ways. I'll just leave it at that.
Leave it up to your imagination.
So have you ever had any beef with another artist? And if so, who? Like a Twitter beef or an in-person beef or an altercation that you're happy to share?
It's the beef section.
Beef section. Honestly, like in general, we've just never listened to what anyone else is saying, like whether it's critics or other bands or anything. It's just like, if you've got a strong opinion about our music, I mean, wow, that's good for you. You have that.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening and being annoyed or whatever you are. We would, as people, are very non-confrontational kind of.
Yeah.
We wouldn't even entertain it kind of thing. So,
okay. A beef-free band, I like it. Yeah.
Have you guys had beef with anyone?
No, but we always find it interesting as to like.
We're like the kids in the playground going fight, fight.
Yeah.
That I've never thrown a punch in my life.
No, right? Me neither.
So, what is the best piece of advice you've been given? And if you could relay that advice to some upcoming bands, artists or musicians, what would it be?
Like, what would you give the 13-year-old Dan? Like, how would you...
Yeah, it could come from you. It doesn't have to be from someone else. Yeah.
I think that, again, just concentrate on making music and that being your focus rather than anything else whatsoever. Yeah. You know, just practicing, getting as good as you can at your instruments and enjoying it as much as you can. And, like, just let that be the focus and everything else will just kind of take care of itself. And if it doesn't, then it doesn't. But
that's good advice.
Right. Well, we've reached the second part of the podcast, which is the final part, which is the quick fire round. So basically, it's just the first thing that comes to your head.
Oh dear.
So when we say,
I'm so bad at this.
This is where the Wikipedia searching, the Google searching comes in. So when we say a word, you say like whatever. So you can dwell on it, or you can literally just say one word, or you can refuse to answer. That's fine.
Okay.
So if I was to say dogs, you would say cats or whatever. Anyway.
Oh, we're into like, what's it? Opposites.
Oh, I mean, it can be. Or no, it could just be. It's just the first thing that comes to your head.
But the mad thing, we had a massive conversation about this on tour. Like, you know, if you say the opposite of a dog is a cat, like, that's not really the opposite, is it? The opposite of a dog would probably be nothing. Like, you know, air. But like a cat is in a like in our
quite similar. Yeah, a cat's similar. It's got four legs.
It's four legs. They're not the opposite at all.
Yeah, you know,
but we
right.
think of it as that just because of the stories about dogs and cats.
Was like, this after the gummy bears?
Might have been. Yeah, those kind of conversations definitely come out.
It's on a whole new level now.
Okay, so when we say the Toffees, you say?
Everton.
Okay. Any more on Everton or just...
Oh, did you say that because you know I'm an Everton fan?
Yeah, we'd Google.
Oh, yeah, great. Does it say on Google I'm an Everton fan? Yeah. Wow, amazing. Yeah.
I think it's genius, the Everton shop in Liverpool 1. The Everton shop is called Everton 2, yeah. Liverpool 1.
It's brilliant.
It's on the address, it reads Everton 2, Liverpool 1, which is fantastic.
So good. Classic Scouse centre here, mate. Yeah.
Australian short-legged, muscular, you're giving me a hard one here. Quadrupedal. Marsupial. That's a great, well delivered question.
Should we do that one again?
So when Freddie says,
how do you say that?
When Freddie says, Australian short legged, muscular, quadrupedal marsupial.
You say? Yeah.
I say wombats.
I also
think you should have added square poos. Okay. Because they do square poos. Yeah, their shits are square. A cube.
What? The next one, when we say Lipper.
Paul McCartney. Yeah, no, lovely guy. We actually interviewed him one time on Radio 1. You know, like Zane Lowe would go away in January. This is like 2008 probably or something. And we ended up interviewing him and we were absolutely bricking it because it was like Paul McCartney. Like, and we were told you can't, don't ask him anything about the Beatles. He's just talking about his new like solo stuff and, you know, but don't actually have a question in there about that. And we were like, yeah, of course, that's fine. Did a load of research. The interview went really well. And then at the end, we were like, oh, what's your, you know, you've had a such long career. What's one of your fondest memories? And then he literally started telling a story about like, oh, there's this time when me and John and he, you know, he just mentioned the Beatles and like their early gig in Liverpool and getting a pint thrown on them or something, you know, and we were just sat there like, we drank a bottle of wine. We were so nervous and we were just like, oh my God, what is going on here? So yeah, absolute legend of a guy.
Okay, next one. When we say gherkin, you say...
Naughty tour managers. I say pickled.
Okay, when we say Andy Hall Hall...
I say I share a studio with him. Lovely guy.
Yeah, this is the... Yeah, so Andy's like, we've spent many, many a night, many a day...
Many an hour.
...at his studio, which you also share.
Yeah, yeah.
We have like two songs on the first album and two songs on the new one that's coming out that we did with Andy. But most importantly is, because we've not been there for a few months now, is there a picture still there that's a hand-drawn picture on the left-hand side by the Juno? On the wall.
There's like a It's like a biro drawing.
Is this one of your work of art? Oh yeah,
it's me.
yeah, it might well be.
Next time you go in your studio,
I'm going in tomorrow actually, so okay. I'll try and have a look out for that.
It should be from the view of behind Andy at the desk, and he had a jacket over the back of his chair.
Oh, I think Noah, that does ring a bell.
Yeah, that's me. That's my handiwork.
You're actually good at art then.
Cheers, man. Thank you very much.
How much he does in the studio that he can afford to spend the day.
That's what I'm saying. While these guys are busy at work, I'm just...
doodling. Yeah,
I'm just doodling.
His easel.
I think I've played on your drum kit as well once. You've got a beautiful, is it a 60s Ludwig?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
It's nice, isn't it?
And thank you.
Of course. Oh no, I'm glad it gets used.
It's gorgeous. Yeah.
Amazing.
And then finally, last one.
Dan Haggis.
When we say Dan Haggis, what do you say?
Me.
But what do you like? What's the first word that comes to your head?
I know that guy. I look at his stupid face in the mirror every day. I'm like, oh, not that guy again. What's the first thing that comes to my head? Fucking hell.
Legend.
Yeah, there you go. No. That is a very deep question, isn't it? It really is weirdly deep because it's, yeah.
Go anyway.
I feel like this is one for the therapist. You'd be here for hours. I'll be crying by the end of it.
We can leave it unanswered if you want. We can just leave it.
I think that's good, yeah. The story is still going. There's no verdicts out. Although actually, no, I guess me and my dad and my brother like having a few drinks and talking about religion and stuff years ago, and... none of, like, my dad's an absolute atheist and we are as well, but like my and then we were like, well, I think actually better we'll start a new, not religion, a new like sort of cult, let's call it that,
movement,
the Mysteriousts. So basically we just accept that everything is a mystery, and like we cannot ever hope to either say there is or there isn't. Everyone should always just try and keep an open mind and keep going and keep trying to discover and never actually expect to get to the end of the mystery. So if anyone out there would like to join the Mysteriousts...
£5 a month.
It's a monthly fee.
£5 a month and you get a big t-shirt with an M on it.
Free gherkin.
Lifetime supply of gherkins.
Lifetime supply. That's a great way to end it. Thank you so much for being a guest.
Thanks for having me.
For being here. And shout out to the Beethoven dog, which I think has disappeared.
He has left now.
It's gone. But thank you so much.
Yeah. See you in a hotel bar around the world at some point, I'm sure.
We'll see you soon.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Nice one.
Huge thanks to Dan for being part of the podcast and to the Windmill Hotel Bar for having us. And who knows, maybe one of these days we'll dress up in the Three Wombat costumes and cause some chaos on stage.
Also, we couldn't do this podcast without you guys listening, so a huge thanks to you for being part of the Floors family.
And if you do like what you hear and you haven't already, please make sure you like, comment and subscribe. It really does make so much difference for us, especially now as we're starting out.
Join us next time where we will be chatting to Hugh from no other than The Kooks. Expect stories of beef with pretty much every UK band in the mid-noughties, how to successfully ask for Kylie Minogue's phone number, and actual band fistfights whilst drunk on crack and rum. Only on...